This Sunday finds number 36 with a lot more yesterdays than tomorrows left at the meeting house. Last Sunday we saw how Jesus said goodbye in the Gospel of John. It was like pouring molasses out of a fruit jar. There he takes his own sweet time, navigating through four whole chapters. Today we get Luke's take on it. Jesus had come back to his hometown, but word had already leaked out about him to his neighbors, and so expectations were unrealistic, they were sky high, and at first they really loved what they saw. Man, this Jesus, this carpenter's son, Mary's boy, he can sure preach. Luke says they marveled at his ability. And then there were three forms of the popular messianic hopes of his time that were confronting him. One, to be a new Moses, would win over the Pharisees. Two, to be a new David would put the zealots in his corner for sure. Be like John the Baptist would put the separatist Essene sect on his side guaranteed. Guess which role Jesus claimed? None of the above. Jesus was a square peg in a round hole, and he couldn't be squeezed into any of these preconceived notions instead of the popular expectation of a new King David, warrior, military Messiah. Of all things, Jesus chose for himself the suffering servant role of Isaiah 61. Except, knowing Jesus, he took it a step further. Instead of the exclusivism that they wanted to hear, Jesus believed God's blessing wasn't just for Israel, but for other nations as well. And that didn't go down well. It was so heretical that they ran him out of church. Local hometown boy gets kicked out of church. And they tried to push him over a cliff from boot to boot. But Luke says, no big deal. He passed through the midst of them and went on his way. That's how Jesus leaves in Luke. An inauspicious beginning for a young preacher, to be sure. So, other preachers, like me, can take solace knowing that Jesus blew his first sermon in Nazareth. If it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me. But as always, blowing it depends on who you're talking to. But apparently, God liked it. And I know Luke did, else why tell us about it? Now, Luke's Jesus is not heroic like John's Jesus. They give two different pictures of Jesus' departure. From beginning to end, in the fourth gospel, Jesus is strong man, can do anything, knows everything. Nothing is too big for Jesus in John. He is up for anything the world throws at him. He arrives with a flourish, does his thing with proficiency, getting born, growing up, teaching, healing, being crucified, resurrected, all of that. He does it with a flair. Then, after that, he leaves. But Luke, he comes at it low-keyed. He almost puts a damper on it. It's unusual that it's not unusual. Because heroic deeds are invariably exceptional. Champions act a certain way. They do certain things. They ride white horses in parades and things like that. Sometimes they come out of nowhere, but they always leave with style. Yeah, we like for our heroes to look heroic. We like for them to act heroic. And that's part of what it means to be a winner. You get to look the part and act the part. Coach Carroll carried off his players' shoulders down in an ice-cold Gatorade victory lap. That's what we're talking about. That's John. Mel Gibson as William Wallace in Braveheart being tortured to death on the rack, crying out with his last breath, "Freedom!" Man, that's impressive. Martin Luther King in Memphis, Tennessee. You remember that one? He said, "I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land." And that's been grabbing headlines since 1968, and we still can't let go of it. That's style. None of that in Luke. Unlike in John, Jesus in Luke never left in style. It's always no big deal. He just leaves. His arrival, heralded by angelic choruses, but his departure was muted. He took a few bedsheet angels and some of his buddies out to Bethany. He blessed them and didn't even finish the blessing. And then he just wafted away up in the sky. Out of sight. Luke's gospel is like that. Jesus arrived with a bang and he got banged up and then he left. He entered Jerusalem in a triumphal parade on a donkey and left a condemned failure on a cross. Unlike John's Jesus, who even in failing wins, Luke has no victorious, "I am the Christ," in his telling of Jesus' departure. Before Pilate, just this mild, whatever. "Are you king of the Jews? If you say so." That's Luke. Luke has no planting of a proud flag up Mount Suribachi. Just an old rugged tree up Mount Calvary. No, "Don't cry for me, Argentina, before thousands of spellbound admirers." Just the words, "Today." "Today, you will be with me in paradise." He said that to a dying thief. Muted. No Nathan Hale, "I regret that I have only one life to live for my country." Just, "Daughters of Jerusalem, weep for yourselves. Don't weep for me." To a handful of unnamed women. No gallant style. Because it's not Luke's intention to paint Jesus as a hero warrior, but as a servant savior, modeled after Isaiah 61. So Jesus didn't do things that other heroes did. He did what only the Son of God can do. And with these unimpressive departures, Luke is more interested in what Jesus did before he left than any style of the way he left. It's what Jesus said in the synagogue when he preached that day that Luke wants us to get. He is not rejected because he left. He left because he was rejected. Luke wants us to get that. Now, Jesus was interested in health care when he preached. There were many lepers in the days of Elisha the prophet. One hopes that would be covered. But only Naaman, The Syrian outsider, he's the only one that got healed. And Jesus was one of those, we reserve the right to accept everybody, guys. And that got him in a heap of trouble. But what really bowled him over was his repudiation of nationalism. So Jesus, with that, just lost the zealots. But he gained the world. The first thing any Messiah has to do is to get people to quit looking for one. Listen up, search committee. Another thing about Luke's disdain for heroic departures is his hesitation to put an end to the story of Jesus. Rather, he calls our attention to what Jesus is doing next. He's more interested in that than he is how it ends. So Luke's crucified Jesus doesn't say, like in John, it is finished. It's over with. I've done my job. Now it's up to God. That's John. It's finished. He wraps it all up nicely with valiant kind of finality that we like when we win. See, even in dying, he wins in John. Luke's Jesus doesn't bother with that. Luke's Jesus always has other places to go and other things to do. When the Nazarenes turned violent, he passed through their midst and went on his way. Evidently, they saw that look in his eye and got out of the way. But Luke is more interested in the journey itself, in the going on his way. Not just how it ends. Now, this society, we're so in-focused today. And Dukases speculate all the time about the end of the world, and they keep moving the date back then wrong, hadn't stopped them yet. They just pick another date. How's it going to end? Everybody wants to know how it's going to end. So will it be nuclear? Will it be an asteroid? How will it end? Once the Super Bowl is over, everybody goes, big deal. At least the Denver Broncos did. Ain't no big deal. It's over. Now we can go about our lives. Boomers talk about retiring. At the end of a career, retiring. Retirement didn't even exist a few years ago. But today, our adult lives are shaped by sharp boundaries. There's something about being 59 and a half today. It didn't used to be that. And we're big on departures. So we have role exits. And we expect our kids to grow up and then depart, hopefully. Some get married and then depart. Some work a while and then retire. Some come back and live in your basement. Can't shake them off. This is not Luke's concern. Retirement. Luke's Jesus never made any big deal out of exits. The way we leave matters, but it's not as important as what happens before we leave and after we leave. That's what Luke's after. In my own leaving, I look at these two Gospels and I feel closer to Luke than John. Y'all know I care about you. And I hope good things continue to happen here. But when it's time to go, you say goodbye and you wish one another good speed. And then you vacate the premises. What won't happen is holding on too long. Longer than I should. Which can be the cause of a lot of relational damage. Not letting go. Today, after church, we have to leave immediately. Libby and I, we've been invited to Warwick Central Baptist Church, our former congregation. of Rhode Island Lovelies, who know that we're leaving, and they invited us down to say goodbye to them after church. Well, I haven't been there in 8 years. I live only 10 miles away. Close proximity, where I could meddle and get in a lot of action down there and cause problems. I haven't been there in 8 years because of my respect for John Hooker and his role as their pastor. Besides, I got enough here to keep me busy, putting out these signs and everything. But the point is, you have to respect the role of the current preacher and only go if I'm invited. Notice what Jesus did before he left. That is what Luke is really after. What did he do before he left? He did his best service, his wisest teaching, his most inspiring act of forgiveness. He saved all that for the last. And he was consistent throughout. In his first miracle at the wedding of Cana, what did it say? It said, save the best wine for last. That's it. Experience teaches us realistically that life is going to get harder and harder. Live long enough, you know what I'm talking about. But it also teaches us, hopefully, that it will get better and better. Luke notes in these parting gestures of Jesus that each time he left one place, it was to go to another place and another task. You know, there comes a time to let go, even for Jesus. It can come too soon. It can be too late. But there's wisdom in sensing that the time is now to try something else. That's Jesus in Luke. Nelson Mandela was released from prison at the age of 71 after 30-something years. Instead of making up for lost time, what does he do? He goes on a world peace tour. And when South Africans needed a president, he's the one they chose. The day when Jesus preached in his hometown, Luke says every eye was fixed upon him. Every eye in the synagogue was fixed upon Jesus. And within an hour, they tried to waste him. But God said, not yet. A little more left for the boy to do. So Luke says he just left. He went through the midst of them and went on his way. Nothing noteworthy as we think of notoriety passed through their midst. What was gripping about Luke 4 is what he said in Nazareth before he left. He said something extremely radical. He said, today. First word Jesus ever spoke in a sermon. The Gospel of Luke. Today. Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. And the good news, Jesus said, is for right now, and it's for everybody, or it's for nobody. And those who think they are God's faves aren't going to like that. Either then or now. So Jesus walked away from the naysayers, but not as much an away from as it was a going to. And that's a good model for you when you feel trapped. When you feel trapped and you don't see any way out, do what Jesus did. He walked through their midst and went over to nearby Capernaum. And there, he did mighty works. Jesus could do anything in Capernaum. He couldn't do anything in Nazareth. Why? It wasn't because of Jesus. Because they wouldn't allow him to. No prophet is without honor except in his hometown. I always thought Jesus could do anything. That's why he's Jesus. That's John's Jesus. We're in Luke today. Not in St. Luke. Where even God is limited by our intolerance. So Jesus left his hometown behind that day when he was first getting started, and he never returned, as far as we know, to arrive at another place where his gifts could be appreciated and where they could be utilized. On the last evening of his earthly life, the emphasis is not on how he left, but what did he do on that last evening? He sat down at a table with his buddies. Every eye was fixed on him. They didn't know it, but we know it. Within an hour, everything would fall apart. It would disintegrate into arguments about which one of us is the best. Don't you love that? So disappointing. But then came betrayal, then denial, then arrest, then crucifixion. But watch what Luke says. His friends are arguing about who's best. Luke says, he went outside. Don't you love that? He went outside. A furor in Nazareth, and he passes through their midst, and they got out of his way. Egotistical turmoil in Jerusalem, and Jesus went outside. In both places, he just leaves. Nothing heroic. But what he said in Jerusalem before he left was something that we haven't caught up with yet. "This is my body," he said. "This is my body broken for you. This cup is the new covenant, my blood. Do this in remembrance of me." And then he went outside. But not before leaving them with something to remember. Where did he go? It doesn't say. He just went out. Went out to save the world. Nothing heroic. Just going outside, no big deal. But what went on before he went outside and what went on after he went outside is huge. And that will always be the measure of each of us. What makes these days hard for me is our shared experience these past 8 years. The depth of living, at least from my end and my perspective, has been remarkable these last 8 years. But just a blip on the overall longevity of this historic congregation. What's 8 years compared to the hundreds of years? But that's why pull up that word. That's why today we can laugh a little louder. We can cry a little softer. We can love a little stronger. Because we were friends. Nothing heroic. I'm just your pastor.